Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is a personal friend now. I have been following Rob's work for a very long time. We run around the same circles and the same networks, and we actually had the chance to share the same stage at EdTech Week on a panel with Julia Fallon and Jacob Cantor, two of my other great dear friends to my heart. And Rob is a part of that group too. And, you know, just from the synergy of that panel, Rob, It was great. There was roughly about 200 people that was at our session at EdTech Week. And as I was sitting on the panel, just hearing you talk about this word that I use very frequently, even so as a part of the name, the title of my book, Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, you use the word and you surgically unpacked intentionality in the context of advanced platforms, different AI solutions, and the partnership between schools, leaders, and ed tech companies and startups. And I was like saying to myself intrinsically, I got to get Rob on the podcast. So made the phone call to my audience. Rob and I are on various text messaging threads. And it's just an absolute honor to actually bring Rob Dickinson to you, because we've had many, many geek out conversations, even geek out conversations on text threads with Saab, with Julia, with Jacob. And then yesterday, Rob, as I was looking over the questions preparing for this, I was like, man, I got heavy hitters on this and don't even know. We're all sharing different strategies and articles about AI. I was like, I can't wait for my audience to be able to engage with you. So it is, without further ado, and such an honor to bring Rob Dickinson, who is the CIO for the Wichita, Kansas, or Wichita Public Schools in Wichita, Kansas. I don't know if I said it. School district, public schools. It's just so independent school district. I mean, it's, Rob, I tell you, across the country, it's just different, but it's just glad to have you here. Rob, welcome to VFE, my friends.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here. Thinking about this whole year and the changes that have happened both on society, both locally in our school district, it's an interesting time, isn't it?
Rob, I tell you, when I talk about interesting, I always like to use the word that is a profound time. It is an unprecedented time, right? Because not only are we dealing with a variety of different economic shifts, broad transformations in education, and then also this evolution and revolution of artificial intelligence and technology that you and I talk about frequently, having all of these different variants come together within this conglomerate, it just makes it, I like to say, this extreme dissonance on how we truly move and scale an education and operating model to be in alignment with our generational learners. So this conversation, I would say, is needed. But more importantly, I'm learning from you as well as my audience today. So Rob, please don't hold back, because, you know, like I just stated, you know, within the text threads that we're on, the many conversations that we have, it would be selfish that we do not disseminate and share all that information. So please be you, Rob, on this as well.
Will do.
Rob, my first question to you is a fun question, right? And I couldn't wait to ask this to you, because we always have serious conversations, but we never really unpacked it this way. But Rob, you are a national voice, and you are. I see everybody's coming to you. Everybody speaks to you about AI, about technology, about innovative models in education. You're a recognized name, Rob, and well-respected. But Rob, for those that do not know your work in Wichita Public Schools and globally, what song, I can't wait to ask this question to Julia, but what song unpacks your leadership signature for impact and influence?
You know, I think it would have to be Don't Stop Believing by Journey. And the reason why I would say that is because today, with the amount of ambiguity and uncertainty, like, you have to just believe that things are going to be better. I think of the, you know, this last week, MIT just released a figure of 11% of jobs would be replaced by AI through a research study that they had. And the impact of even 11% of jobs, right? I think there's such an uncertainty as far as what jobs will be produced, because I think we'll hit, you know, a little bit of this negative connotation that AI is going to replace some jobs. And I think it's going to replace some tasks, right? And very narrow tasks in the beginning. But I think in the future, it's going to generate more jobs than and newer types of jobs and newer types of work than what we're used to. And I think I equate it back to, you know, like my grandparents and my parents, thinking of, you know, I was just there over Thanksgiving and talking with them, you know, how I work today is very different than how they worked, right? And you think it's not fair, right, as a person, because you're like, oh, I had more struggles or I had this. I think for our kids, it's they're going to live through a lot of changes. And I love Salil Bloom's quote that adaptability is the highest form of intelligence, right? I finished reading that book, Five Types of Wealth. And I love that quote because I think adaptability is going to be something that we have to understand how to unlearn, relearn, and learn again.
Yeah. And Rob, great point. Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Love that song. And again, I think what's more compelling, right, and provocative that you had said this, which is needed. I always say that the definition of transformation, Rob, is not learning, but unlearning what you know. And I think this unprecedented time of transformation, unlearning to learning, and this I like to say competency, this leadership competency around adaptability, right? That we have to be adaptive, but moreover, prepare our students to be in an adaptive context of what I like to say the AC stage of education after COVID-19, specifically with our learners today, Generation Alpha, and coming into our schools very shortly, Generation Beta. Very interesting, right? Very interesting that 11% of our jobs, this is the research that you stated, 11% of our jobs will be replaced with AI. But I love the fact that you said that it won't replace jobs, but it will replace tasks. And that is like essential because there's this narrative out there that AI is going to completely take over. But I always reference Kareem Lakhani's sentiment where he always states that AI won't replace humans, but humans with AI will replace humans without AI. Very good book that he wrote, you know, leading in the age of AI. But this level of uncertainty. And I think that we have to be clear that we are living in this environment, this educational ecosystem of uncertainty. I always like to say that it's this advanced level of VUCA. And the advanced level of VUCA is vice. Uncertain, volatile, intersectionality, complexity, and exponential. So now we're not just living in this VUCA world, but we're living in this unvice world where adaptability as well as uncertainty is going to have this polarity with that. I really love how you stated that we have to unlearn or we have to learn to unlearn to relearn. Very, very compelling for this time. To my audience, just in that first question, please replay that because Rob talks about various strategies, about 3 to 4 different strategies within his answer that I think that is a part of culture. Right, that we have to be mindful of cultural shift because, again, we are unlearning, which is a key, I like to say, pinnacle for transformation. But, Rob, I want to extend on your response to that first question because it aligns to what we're facing today, right? Our kindergartners today, Rob, we're getting old, my friend. Our kindergartners today are projected to graduate high school in 2038. They are projected. Wait, Rob, listen to this. Let's hope we're around. They're projected to retire from their specific profession by 2087. All right. We'll be old, my friend. I think we'll be great grandfathers at that time. But when we think about it from a learning organization school design aspect, I always like to say now with that data in front of us, we have to be what I call AC 2035 ready, after COVID 2035 ready. Now, you're one of the respected voices, as I stated before, within the ecosphere, but provide a level set definition of what it means to be AC 2035 ready, with this connotation that our kindergarten students are going to be graduating high school in 2038, as well as retiring from their specific profession in 2087. What competencies are going to be needed to compete globally in the workforce and world?
I think COVID taught us some lessons. I've never in my 26 years of education handed out laptops in a parking lot kind of thing, or did some of the things during COVID that we were able to do. I think what it allowed us to do as an educational institution is go back to cognitive skills, thinking about critical thinking, thinking about problem solving. You know, if I had to think about what those futures look like, I got to start Creative Minds last year as a micro school within our public institution. It's a K-6 vertical classroom, which means K through six students are in one classroom together. And if I were to break it down, I would say elementary school is learning by doing, middle school skill discovery, and high school is skill development.
Can I interject? Because I want my audience to hear those three stages again. Can you repeat that one more time? Because, wow, that was profound.
So I think elementary is learning by doing, and I think it develops those tangible cognitive skills. I think middle school is skill discovery. So many times you look at CTE and other pathways, and I think you'll see a lot more CTE-esque like pathways in the future, developing skills, because I think in the future, it's less about just having a high school degree and moving on to a post-secondary institution. You're seeing more collaboration with post-secondary right now in our high school. So skill discovery is needed in that middle school area. I went through a program called Leadership Wichita, right? And so you go around, you visit the different industries within the city. Our highly aircraft industry, right? So you go see Spirit, Textron, you kind of understand what skills are needed in those industries. If I were to replicate middle school, it would be similar to that, right? It'd be like helping our kids understand what industries and what skills are needed locally to help them have an awareness. Because I lead our middle school STEM camps every summer. 800 middle school kids roll through our STEM camps. And many of them are like, I didn't even know this place was here, right? Because I go back to how we grew up, Mike, where, you know, your mom said, get out of the house and don't come back until the lights come on, right? The street lights. And you built a social fitness, right? Well, our kids don't grow up that way anymore. So we've got to build social fitness and cognitive skills together with these kids. And I think doing that through skill discovery is an important process of that. At the high school level, it's skill development. I think, well, you're seeing us here at Wichita Public Schools develop future ready centers, which are, they don't look like classrooms. Our advanced manufacturing FRC, kids walk through and they learn material science. They're learning, you know, how to build an aircraft. And that's being taught by Airbus as well as WSU Tech. And so our students are getting application level experiences and certifications. We just opened the HACK this year, which is the Hub for Advanced Computer Knowledge. And it's cybersecurity, machine learning as an extension of computer science. So it's hard to have a student choose which pathway they want in high school. That's so in depth like that when you haven't done skill discovery at the middle school level.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rob, thank you for that. And we use VFE as an asynchronous tool for professional learning for leaders as well as educators across the globe. And to my audience, this is one of those answers that you need to be able to rewind, to be able to disaggregate and unpack to his granular level, specifically around the three stages that Rob have articulated within this K-12 trajectory, or I should say pre-K-12 trajectory. Rob, I look at the, as you were unpacking the three stages, K-5, learning by doing, skill discovery, 6-8, and skill development, 9-12. I was associating each of those stages with various indicators from my 22nd century systems learner framework. And Rob, if you can continue, because we're going to talk about your Future Ready Centers and the Creative Minds micro school that is in Wichita Public Schools. But can you unpack this social fitness and developing of cognitive skills in this interconnected manner? Because I think that now within the AC stage of education, this focus on workforce development, creative and creating innovative pathways and alignment to developing skills and competencies, I think this whole social fitness is a thread that is obsolete within the integrated model to prepare our students for the future of the world, the future of the work. What does social awareness look like specifically at that 6-8 level? The trans adolescent learner who is fundamentally different, the antithesis of you and I from to today. But again, social fitness, AC stage of education, generation alpha, and the trans adolescent learner 6-8. Just unpack that for my audience.
One of the things that's interesting is the size of their network, right? So I think of myself as a middle school student in the 80s, right? I'm pretty old. I'm turning 50. So whenever I think about my middle school age, my network was probably about 15 people, right? It was my neighborhood, and there wasn't internet. There wasn't the connectedness that our kids have. Whenever I see, even I have three daughters, they're in their 20s, right? So my 28-year-old, 26-year-old, and now 23-year-old, they even have a very different environment because technology was such at a ramp at that time that their exposures to social media was very different, even between the 23 and 28-year-old. And so I think you're seeing this microchasm, right? You see these generations are smaller, not because of society, but because of technology, right? I think that's something that we have to grasp as a society, is that realizing that it's technology that changes generations, not necessarily the society underpinning it. So whenever you think about the network that a kid has today, if I'm 13 years old and my parents have now allowed me to have access to a smartphone that has always on internet, my network is now millions or billions. And so there's a different level of social fitness and understanding of what level of connectedness, right? Like Mike, you and I, we text message, right? We've got connectedness via text during the day. And that connection is very different than the face-to-face conversation we're having right now virtually, which would be very different than the conversation that we have at FETC, where we're literally in the same room together. And I think social fitness today for a middle school student is understanding all of those different types of engagements, but also the level of relationships that are between all those, right? Because I think our kids think all of those are relationships, and it really depends on the depth of understanding and the connectedness with that other human, right? And helping our kids navigate that when we didn't have to navigate that is very hard for us as teachers, as faculty, to understand.
Yeah. And Rob, well contextualized, because just this past Thanksgiving, and this is bringing memories back, right, of what you were saying, is just this past Thanksgiving, my son was on his iPad and playing games, you know, with various other kids throughout the country. And, you know, I got to meet some of his friends. One is in Florida, one is in New York, one was in, I believe, Texas. And he's been steadily playing with these kids via online through the various games that he's on, whether it be Madden or Roblox. I hope I'm getting the games correct. But I asked him, Mikey, have you ever met any of these kids in person? And he said, no. Now, it just brought a memory back to me where my friends, when I was growing up, just like you, Rob, we met the parents, we were in the house, we were outside playing. And then now, Generation Alpha, they have these sustained relationships with other kids, and they have never met them in person, only have seen them, whether it be through FaceTime or whether it be through the gaming system or the games that they're playing. Just radically different, Rob, than when you and I were growing up. And I have a 10-year-old. So, you know, I'm going through these various stages, and Mikey is entering or about to enter, you know, this trans-adolescent learner stage where there's that confusion in identity theory, right? The confusion identity theory of a trans-adolescent learner. I wonder how that research is going to be challenged from a confusion identity theory in the context of AI technology and Generation Alpha. Well stated, Rob. I couldn't put it any better. But I want you to go back to your leadership, right? And just thinking about the trajectory over time, specifically now, moving from the DC stage of education during COVID-19 to now this fourth industrial revolution, which is the AC stage of education after COVID-19. What leadership lessons from the private sector, Rob, because I know you have a background in this, from the private sector, you believe are driving scalable and, more importantly, sustainable transformation at Wichita Public Schools? I know you built the Future Ready Centers, the Creative Minds with the micro schools, but how do you interface strategies with that magnitude, or kind of like a meta-ruptor from an innovation context, in the district's operating plan, instructional framework, or even a technology roadmap for infrastructure re-architecting?
You know, I'd have to say it's an iterative approach. It has to be. And I think you have to be okay to fail fast, and it's necessary to fail fast. Having an agile or iterative approach is important. I think we moved away from rigid long-term plans and have adopted more iterative approaches to problem solving. I think it allows us to be more responsive to the industry, because the industry is changing too, right? Like, I think in the past, you know, every so often the state would change the state standards, and you would have these standards that were changed. And so now I think we're starting to understand and go back to this fundamental that our education is serving industry. And listening to industry and listening to what is needed in industry and working our way back. And I think that's a necessary component for scalability, because then you understand how many of a product that you need to produce for that industry. So I think that helps for relevance, which is like this foundational thing that somehow we removed out of education for so much time, right? Because kids today, if they sit in a traditional classroom and they're not engaged, it's because they've lost the relevancy of what's happening. And I think having that relevance ensures maintenance over time, but also cognitively for that student, a retainment for a much longer period than like cramming for a quiz, right? If I find high relevance in something and I value that, I'm going to retain that knowledge or that skill for a much longer time. And I think that helps us, you know, it's hard for me to predict 3 years down the road now. I remember back in the day, whenever we had an E-rate, we had to develop these 5-year plans. I can't imagine what 5 years looks like from now. It's hard for me to imagine what 3 years looks like from now. So I think having agile and iterative approach is something I like. In it, April Webb, I got to listen to her at South by Southwest a couple of years ago. And she likened it to, Mike, you've driven on an icy road before, right? So when you're driving down an icy road, you don't make large adjustments, you make small adjustments. And so when you're steering into a corner on an icy road, it's those micro adjustments. And that's what I think it's like today, both in education and in the industry. It's your skill level has to be like driving on an icy road, micro adjustments and continually unlearning to relearn. What I learned in ChatGPT in the last 3 years, since it's just reached its third birthday, right? I engage with AI very differently today than I did 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rob, well stated, right? Because again, going back to that theme from the outset that we have to learn to unlearn to relearn. Wherever I speak, Rob, if it's a keynote or a workshop that I'm leading, I always bring it back to this. And you stated it, that we can't predict what 3 to 5 years would be from now. So having or developing static strategic operating plans or continuous district level or school level continuous improvement plans kind of defy where we're heading in the AC stage of education. But I always state, Rob, that, you know, 10 years ago, would we have ever thought about getting in a stranger's car at 4 a.m. to take us to the airport? And this is 10 years ago. Everybody would say absolutely not. But now is naturalized in our world because Uber and Lyft supplies that. I always say 10 years ago, Rob, would we have ever thought about spending multiple days in a state that we may have never been to and go into a stranger's house where we take their keys and we actually stay there for 3 to 4 days, not knowing anything about this person? 10 years ago, we would say, absolutely not, you're crazy. But now Airbnb is the preferred method than hotels. So you are absolutely right that, you know, it's hard from this predictability standpoint that the education model underscores that we cannot operationalize like that anymore. Bringing this level of relevance, I really love that because, Rob, you stated that, you know, where sometimes we cram for a quiz. We have this hyper-perseveration on outputs of standardized assessments, but in reality, those students are only using 15% of those skills embedded within the test in their naturalized lives. So we do have to take an economist perspective when we have to listen to the industry to be agile and iterative around the redesign or design of our models. But you know, Rob, when we think about artificial intelligence, I kind of want to seamlessly move into this because your last answer really segues into this, right? When we think about diverse intelligence systems from this impact, a broad impact, you and I know, you know, within various learning organizations across the globe, and again, we're building capacity simultaneously, there's a level of ad hoc implementation because of the depth and the complexity of redesigning the model. Learning to unlearn to relearn, right? But change management in this analog sense is complex because what we had to do is apply research, science, prototyping, and progress monitoring all at the same time. Arduous in context, you and I know. But in your words, Rob, what methods and strategies can be successfully or used successfully to implement diverse technology and AI into the operating model for this keyword, coherence? And then second, from this classroom practitioner lens, what does successful AI adoption look like within, let's go back, bring it back to oldie but goodie, the instructional core, teacher, student, content?
I get the opportunity to set both operationally and instructionally in this district. And so I love having the two different lenses and being able to participate in both. I've had the opportunity I absorbed the research department in the spring and moved it underneath my AI specialist. So now it's research and intelligence. So I think operationally, there are an immense amount of efficiencies and next level things that we can do. And what's interesting is, you know, even just a year ago, whenever I would talk with district leadership on the operational side, they're all in on making AI. And then once you start to move instructionally, it's like, ooh, there's like this sacred cow, right? You don't want to disrupt the instructional side. And it's understandable, right? Because you're moving to a different style of computing, because AI and generative AI Well, I would just say generative AI tends to lend itself to probabilistic computing, which means every time you're going to get a different answer, right? And that, I think that brings some complexity to the conversation of learning. I think it gives us an opportunity to look at even us as humans, right? When you think of the percentage of hallucinations today are about 2.3% out of the frontier models, I would always ask that question of what percentage of hallucinations come out of humans? Because, right, if you wanted to compare this, right, I think you need to compare it. We're a human species. We like comparisons. And so whatever I think instructionally about AI and what's needed, I think about first the ethical considerations, right? I need to make sure that it's safe and secure for staff, students, the data, all those pieces. As a CIO of the district, obviously that rides on me, right? Knowing that companies need to be able to not use our data to train on, right? So I think you're seeing AI being implemented in two different fashions. There's AI as a product and AI as a service. And so when I think about those ethical considerations, we're even changing our app approval process to re-go through and vet when company has introduced generative AI as a function or as a feature, because I think it's important to walk that walk, especially with families. And in Kansas, we have a lot of things that we have to get permission from parents on, and apps are one of those that we get active permission. It's not passive. So every year I go through a process of asking, and parents go through our online enrollment and they vet that process. But helping, I think one of the most important things that on the instructional side of AI, and I say the ethical side of this, is that it's informing students, informing staff, and informing parents, because no one else, and I liken this to social media. Like, I think one of the bad parts of social media as a society that we didn't do was we didn't educate parents how to navigate social media parenting, right? That should really, I guess, land on education at some point. I think the same way with AI, it will need to be that way. Whenever I think about those ethical considerations, when I think about professional development, it's constant and it has to be quality. I think of when we first started training and we trained. So if ChatGPT came out that end of November-ish, 1st of December, 3 years ago, that following January, February, we were training teachers already in staff meetings how to use ChatGPT. And there wasn't a Microsoft Copilot or something that allowed us to do it in a way that we could teach data privacy and data literacy. Really, it's about data literacy. There's all these functions of literacy that we need to teach our teachers and students about. Data literacy is one. Obviously, AI literacy, digital literacy, just navigating all those. So I think professional development is super important. It has to be ongoing and job embedded, because remember, as you're using generative AI right now, you're eating a cake, right? You're experiencing this cake. And while you're eating this cake, there's another cake in the oven that's bigger, better, and more accurate, and it's got different features than the cake you're currently eating. And so you're going to experience another cake. It's not this growth that's like this. It's such a jump every time you see a different model with different features. And so the importance of that professional development each time that change happens is important. And I think the strategy to be coherent is adopting all of that together as one, and it being a single voice, because, you know, it's about the storytelling. It's about what could happen. I think wonder and curiosity have to be a component of professional development with staff, helping them understand the ways to use it personally so that then they use it professionally. Because I think this is such, any general purpose technology is going to affect everyone personally and professionally. And to get somebody to adopt it themselves, they've got to use it personally before they use it professionally.
Yeah, Rob, excellent way to put it. I started laughing because when we talk about hallucinations, right, specifically with AI, I love the aspect that you said, what's the percentage of human hallucinations? And that is that I'm gonna steal that and copyright that and say, hey, that's Rob's human hallucinations. But Rob, well stated. What I really took from that is this whole focus around ethical considerations, professional development, professional learning, but this whole literacy, focus on building literacy and really building social capital around this incoherence. You're absolutely right. Storytelling, allowing teachers, allowing leaders the wondering and curiosity around implementation, which I think would be the residual of this level of innovation. Rob, I want to touch upon this because it's very contentious. Whenever I bring this up, people kind of like ignore it, and it's a negating factor. And I think it's important, specifically now in the AC stage of education, where education is moving towards from a legislative standpoint, not more in the lines of an isolated state of implementation, but more this national strategy. And people kind of be like, oh, you know, bringing this up, it's kind of like taboo. But public education is going to be in this crisis if it fails to innovate. And the reason I bring that up, because market-based competition and reform is starting to move into education, right? It's becoming a competition for families and for students. And when we think about this whole choice voucher system that's going to be part of our national strategy, public education has to innovate because, again, we're going to be competing against various models, right? We talk about the alpha model. You have already created Creative Minds, which is a micro school that lives within a district in itself. But I want to ask you specifically, because I know I can have this conversation with you. Now, with a lens from this disruption to meet market needs, i.e. students and families, in this 21st century global economy, AC stage of education, how will public schools and public education have to adjust to this new evolution of market-based competition and reform? Now, you have done this already in Wichita. This is a business sector ideology and strategy. How do we do this by 2030? Because again, it might compromise public education and the continued expansion of public education in itself.
I think if you go back to thinking about that iterative approach, right? I really do think in public education, you're going to see a lot of changes happening. You're seeing it now in post-secondary, right? People are questioning four-year degree. I think you're going to see that shift down, and you're seeing a lot more collaboration with post-secondary with our institutions right now. So I think at that level, at the end, right, if I were to work my way back, it would be, I think you're going to see more and more industry and embeddedness. If you were to go to any of those future ready centers, they don't look like a classroom, right? It doesn't even look like a school. It looks like you're walking into a business almost. And so when I think about that, and then I start back to Creative Minds, which is our K-6 vertical classroom, one of the things we had to do was start to listen to parents. And it's crazy, right? You know, to think about building community, because many of our schools used to be like the cornerstone of the community. And somehow we've gotten away from that. And I don't know if that was just over time of things such as No Child Left Behind and some of those initiatives over time, creating this cloud of difference between school and family, and also family disconnecting from school. But in Creative Minds, what I've learned, because even at Creative Minds, whatever we started last year, the schedule looked very different, and we changed it about six times in the year. And now we're down to what I think is right, but I'm not saying that it couldn't shift. So I think having a back and forth conversation with families of what their needs are and also instilling in them some skills to help them parent as well. Because I think going back to the social media case, like one of the things we didn't do was help a parent navigate social media parenting with their kid. And not that there's some, we oversee all of technology in society, but as an educational institution, I think we're going to have a heavier hand in helping our parents navigate a trajectory of parenting that they don't understand, right? So I think it's a lot of back and forth with parents. We have creative minds. It's not in a district facility. It's actually in what's called the Learning Lab. There are five other micro schools there. We collaborate with those micro schools on a day-to-day basis. And it's, I would say, if I were to bring one of our Wichita Public Schools teachers in and they see all the other micro schools, they wouldn't understand it. It would be foreign to them. But that's the kind of exposure that I think is needed for to help us change as a public institution. Because somehow we got stuck in the bureaucracy of education and not around the intention of what it means to produce a citizen, right? Someone who gives back. What I think of what we've learned in Creative Minds is, you know, art, music, PE is enveloped into all of our project-based learning. So we only do 2.5 hours of instruction and the rest of the afternoon is project-based learning. And we have a STEM rapper that comes in and teach kids music. We have a ballerina dancer that comes and teaches kids dance. We do art. Is enveloped. There are showcases of learning that happens multiple times a year where community members come in to see those things. I think giving our schools autonomy to do different things will be important in the future to take risks, because I think as public education, we've been kind of risk averse and worried more about test scores than we are about the whole child.
Rob, I apologize if I sound fragmented because I'm just writing down various ideas that you had stated. The key theme I take from your answer is around taking risks. And if education, specifically the vertical of public education, do not take the risk for innovation, I think it would be in a crisis within the next 5 years, leading to AC 2035. You have done it, right? With Creative Minds, you have done it with your Future Ready Centers, where now you started to build innovative models within the traditional public education business model.
Isn't it interesting?
Go ahead, Rob.
You pointed out something. You said there's a lot of different. And I think what you just said, like, there's not a one size fits all model. It's a lot different models. And I think that's important in our public education setting, in our systems, especially large districts like ours. It has to be a lot of different experiences to meet the needs of a large, diverse community.
Yeah. And Rob, I want to extend this out that how do we, and this is more of a catalytic type of question for leaders, specifically in public education, is how do we now take that strategic risk, knowing that we have to be iterative and agile to the prototype, more broadly to the archetype of being able to create the flexibility of various threads within the operating model of public education to have those designs in alignment to Generation Alpha, Generation Beta families. Because we're starting to see, you and I are talking about this even on our text message threads, of these new designs that are coming up, and families are choosing to go to these new designs and they're leaving the traditional bureaucracy public education. So how do we now take strategic risk in lieu of being risk adverse? This question, we could spend another hour on this, Rob. So I just love talking to you, my friend, but here's a question that I want you to reflect on, okay? And when you think about all of the things you have done now, and this is kind of like a static question because I know what you're going to say, you know, it's going to change, you know, it's going to change in the next month or two because of how education is so rapidly evolving. But What do you hypothesize, Rob, will be the most significant legacy thread that you will leave in WPS when you think about technology, artificial intelligence, and all the innovative models that you created in Wichita? What is that legacy thread that you are going to leave for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta?
You know, if I love the word intention, right? And I said that in the last podcast. I think I'm going to shift it. I'm going to use another I word. I'm going to say innovation should be expected. And if you could foresee the future, and I hope at some point we're able to actually just project out 3 to 5 years to help a kid understand or either help them cope with uncertainty and ambiguity, because I think it's a hard place to set in for a long time. Whenever I think about the adaptability, the innovation that needs to happen, all of those seem to stand around being able to be resilient in waters that you don't understand. And I think to myself, for myself, what I would love to leave is that change is constant. And it should look very different after I leave than while I was there, and very different after the next person's here, because that change needs to be constant. And I don't think that's necessarily a legacy, but it's necessary. It will be a necessary fuel, right? Like, technology is a fuel. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. But that fuel is going to be constant. And right now, it's like a fire hose. And it's going to continue that way for the unforeseeable future, at least for now. And so whenever I think about our kids and what they need to be okay with, as an educational institution, we need to help them adapt and help them just be good in uncertainty. And I think curiosity is that skill, right? I think we've got to continuously help our kids ask questions. And the question is more important than the answer today. And helping them stay critical and stay curious is what will be needed. I love Saba's, she uses this slide where as a human, AI, human, you define the problem, right? And you define the environment. The AI does this level of tasks for you. Could be agent-based, it could be human-natured. And then you're reviewing, you're adding emotion, you're doing, and so that structure of how a person does things in the future needs to be templated across every industry, every learning facet. Even how we learn is going to be that way in the future, fundamental. Because, I mean, the calculator is the closest thing I can think of to how I grew up, right? I remember math class and my teacher being like, nope, you're not using your calculator today. And I'm like, man.
Hey, Rob, how about this? The TI-80 when I was growing up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so now it's commonplace. And I think it just takes time for culture to adopt that workflow. But that's the future of workflow. Like, a human's going to start it. They're going to define it. AI is going to do a good chunk of the low level tasks that you see that are monotonous, that we don't need to do anymore. And then you're going to review it. There's a judgment piece that humans are going to do. And I would say critical thinking skills and judgment, subjective questions. If you think about the 6 levels of problem solving out of Arizona State University, if there's one site I would give someone to go to, is that Arizona State University 6 levels of problem solving. You have the first 3 levels are kind of where academia sits. So first problem, you've got a problem and an answer, and it can't be anything else. So it's highly verifiable. That can be replaced with AI, definitely, because it's verifiable. It's when you get to level 5 and level 6, which is like COVID, sustainable development goals, climate change. A range of answers aren't going to solve the entire problem. So then when that's not verifiable, it needs subjectiveness and judgment. And that's where the human comes in.
Rob, well stated. And a mutual friend of ours, just love her work, Sava's work. I really loved how you unpacked her three stages of define using the AI and then reviewing from this human intelligent lens. That's the ethos of, as you know, Rob, my agile diagnostic and AI platform, kind of going through that trajectory for strategic performance management. But you gave a great definition of Moore's law, right? That equilibrium between humans and machines, as he put it. I always like to reverse that from an educational lens to put human intelligence and artificial intelligence working in this punctuated equilibrium together. Great way to state it, this phrase that change is constant, and we always want to build the pretext for somebody else, the legacy, to continue to build on what we've already started, and then following kind of like that synergy or that trajectory of everybody's just building off of the legacy work that has already been created. Rob, this has just been an absolute great episode. But our last question is this. I don't know, Rob, I've known you for a while now, Rob, and you and I, we like to talk, but I'm going to attempt to be able to limit you to three words. Only three words, my friend. But what three words do you want our audience to leave with regarding organizational and school preparation for design or redesign to be AC 2035 ready in this fourth industrial revolution?
My first word is humanity. I would say humanity is at the center of all that we do, right? And somehow in ed tech, we kind of de-emphasized humanity in some ways. And I think we could get back to that. Agency. Students need agency. Staff need agency. Too many times I see our classrooms where we have pacing guides and you need to be right where this is at this time of year. I think agency is needed across the industry. And then audacity. I think you need audacity for risk. I think you need to be able to challenge the status quo. I think you need to dream big. Yeah.
I love that, Rob. The three words to my audience from Rob Dickinson: humanity, agency, and we got to have the necessary audacity to change the status quo. Rob Dickinson, thank you for being a guest on VFE. And if any of my audience want to be able to reach out to you via email or social media to be able to extend on any part, any segment of this episode, how will they be able to get in contact with you?
So my handle is @ShowMeRob, and that's on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, X, or whatever you want to call it. And then my email address is rdixon@usd259.net.
Rob, my friend, I'm sure I'll probably talk to you tonight on one of the many text threads that we're on. But from my heart, thank you, my friend. This was just a necessary episode, a necessary conversation to really deepen and extend the work in the AC stage of education. Rob, onward, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.